Thanks, Sally, and the other organizers. Well, I'm Janice Bettinger from Utah State University in Logan, Utah, and I was inspired when I was invited to give this talk by the 200th anniversary of Charles Darwin's birth on the origin of species by means of natural selection. So I thought, the origin of structure by a pedologist, I had to model my title the same way. Pedology is the study of soil. Soil that is naturally occurring on the landscape. And something that we're recognizing more and more is that soil on the landscape, it's a functioning component of these terrestrial ecosystems. Soil morphology is the branch of pedology that we use to describe the structure and form of soils. And we always describe the soil morphology in the field. We describe soil morphology by genetic horizons. So these are horizons that are naturally occurring. So in this example, the surface horizon may have been influenced by humans and cultivation, but below that horizon, we have soil horizons that formed by natural processes. And the inherent properties, even in this cultivated layer, were probably caused by hundreds, if not longer, years of exposure to soil-forming processes. These genetic horizons, if you remember from your soils days, we describe a whole suite of different properties that are part of the soil morphology. One of those properties that we describe, of course, is structure. Now, structure, although we describe it in terms of things like grade, size, and shape, it's related to and has feedbacks with these other morphological properties. For example, the color of a soil may indicate mineralogy, which can then indicate certain structural properties. The texture, of course, is related to structure. We just heard about roots creating pores and therefore feeding back into structure. So, lots of feedbacks between these morphological properties. As a pedologist, structure is a primary indicator of soil development. It's one of the first indicators we use in the field to determine whether or not a soil has been affected by soil-forming processes. Here's a very shallow soil from central Utah in the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, where there's really not much structure formation or soil formation other than the formation of some fine subangular blocky structure. If we look at structure, first we tend to look at the surface structure, and I think that's what a lot of people are focused on today as reviewing the literature, is what's happening in the surface. As a pedologist, when we look at the structure of the surface soil, we begin to think about a geologic deposit becoming soil when it becomes a medium for plant growth. Plants, as we all know, are the primary producers of organic carbon. The process of photosynthesis, by which carbon dioxide and water and sunlight forms organic carbon, drives all of the other biological processes in the soil. In this case here, we've got some aspen trees that would be contributing organic carbon due to leaf drop and litter accumulation on the surface, as well as a nice understory vegetation of grasses and forbs that can give us fine root turnover and other ways of organic matter accumulation. So plants are going to affect soil structure, as we just saw in Paul's talk. Root growth, the proliferation and extension of roots, those roots push aside mineral particles, therefore physically facilitating structure formation, and also creates, as we saw, tubular pores through the soil. The root exudates in the rhizosphere, giving us that organic carbon, those fairly simple compounds that are relatively easily decomposable by microorganisms. So in sum, those fine roots that proliferate through the soil and the exudates that they produce drive microbial decomposition and then produce these other byproducts and, as Paul just mentioned, create a sort of a glue. Soil structure in the surface, we think of as pedologists as being dominantly formed by biological processes. But that we have to make sure if we have sufficient plant cover and soil organic matter. The most common structure that we'll see naturally in the field as a result of biological processes is granular soil structure, the shape of granular, as we see in the surface horizon here. This is the surface horizon of the classic mollisol profile you'll see in the soil taxonomy webpage. Granular structure is roughly spherical. The strength, or now what we call in soil morphology the grade, is positively related to the organic carbon in the soil. Where we have low plant cover and low soil organic matter in the soil surface, we tend to see more physical processes responsible for soil structure. For example, in southern Utah, we have a lot of these arid environments where we have rare endemic plant species. This is an area that's under a lot of exploration for oil shale down in the southern Uinta Basin. The shrubby reed mustard, very low plant cover, and mostly the soils typified by a surface crust and then very weak subangular blocky structure. As you'll see, this whole soil is only about 15 centimeters thick. But it is critical habitat for these endemic plant species. The physical processes in arid systems that tend to have low plant cover, low organic matter, include raindrop impact, which then facilitates soil dispersion. And then, of course, there's heating and cooling, heating causing gas expansion and the formation of vesicular or discontinuous pores from that gas expansion. Platy structure is often common and often associated with horizons at the surface that have vesicular pores. The grade or strength of that platy structure often depends on the texture. For example, in the Great Basin, where we have had a lot of Pleistocene pluvial lakes, higher clay content, we usually get much stronger platy structure, much greater vesicular pore formation than we do, say, in these silt-dominated oil shale environments. And then, of course, we all know about the loss of structure. Typically, in low plant cover environments, lower soil organic matter contents, cultivation and compaction can lead to the loss of soil structure. I'm always struck when I'm in the high-end region of Spain of how they treat their soils, and I think right now they might just be possibly down to the geologic deposit, because when I've been out in the field there, I've seen very little natural structure by biological processes. Moving on to surface versus subsurface soil structure. To review, in the surface horizons, we have low, or if we're right at the surface of the soil, we have no overburden stress. So the weight of overlying horizons is going to be very little. Oops. In most cases, we have relatively high soil organic matter, and therefore processes are dominated by biological soil processes. However, in the subsurface, we will instead have high overburden stress. The weight of the overlying soil column will influence soil structure in the subsoil. We generally have lower soil organic matter, and then therefore the processes of structure formation in soil subsurface are dominated by physical processes. One process that we know happens is thermal expansion and contraction. Materials will expand when they heat up, they'll shrink when they cool. I had no photographs of this, but I was thinking of the Chateau Neuf du Pape wine region in France, where the heating of les jalets, the gravels and cobbles on the soil surface, moderate the climate and make this a very nice wine-producing region. The heating and the cooling, the retention of heat, also leading to thermal expansion and contraction, is a physical process of soil formation. One we see very commonly is freeze-thaw, where liquid water expands upon freezing to solid ice. It's very common in surface soils, in mesic and colder soil temperature regimes. That freezing to ice and then melting of that ice in the spring overall loosens the soil fabric, and it restores the formation of some macropores. In the subsurface, we may actually have some freeze-thaw processes. Of course, we're going to see it more in our colder soil temperature regimes, like frigid and cryic soil temperature regimes. And then, of course, gelisols, those soils that are affected by permafrost, are affected in the subsoil in terms of freezing and thawing and cryoturbation or mixing because of that freeze-thaw. Here's a photograph of southeastern Utah near, actually I'm in Arches National Park looking at the LaSalle Mountains. Where we have rangelands that are grazed, this freeze-thaw process is extremely important in terms of restoring over the wintertime, restoring surface soil structure in these low organic matter arid grazed rangelands. In terms of subsoil structure, probably one of the big physical processes is shrink swell. If we have sufficient clay content and we have at least some high activity clay, at least mixed within that, high activity clays are normally thought of as being vermiculite, also, sorry, smectite, also vermiculite, and generally low sand content, we will have shrinking and swelling. When the soil is wet, the soil will swell. And will actually physically, the soil mass expands with wetting. When the soil mass dries, that soil will shrink. We see this a lot in terms of just soils that are just in the beginning stages of soil development. In septosols, this is the pedon you see on the soil taxonomy page for septosols. Nice example here of subangular blocky structure. As we get higher clay contents in soil, as well as a higher proportion of high activity clay, we begin to see angular blocky structure form. Angular blocky is typified by having flat faces and relatively sharp angles. Depending on the soil, often soils that have high clay content and sometimes that are affected by high exchangeable sodium, we develop prismatic structure where the structural units are elongated vertically. In the field, we'll often see prismatic structure parting to angular blocky. So here's one of the soils I showed earlier. In the BT horizon and then a BTN horizon, so soil horizon with translocated clay and exchangeable sodium, we see prismatic structure in macro view, and as we remove these structural units from the face of the ped, they break down immediately into angular blocks. And we will see coatings on all of those surfaces, dominantly along the prismatic units and secondarily along the angular blocky units. Those macropores that form are avenues for clay translocation, and we see evidence of that in the form of clay films or coatings on those ped exterior faces. And then where we see older soils that over time we actually see this BT horizon being degraded and that clay recycling farther down into the profile, we'll see patches of E material along those macropores. So we know that they're avenues of water movement. Swelling, shrink swell processes, swelling with overburden stress is a very important process. In Texas, Larry Walding and his colleagues several years ago talked about how do we see soil structure in vertisols, high clay, high shrink swell soils, where we have soil masses that are going to expand in all three dimensions when the soils get wet. There's a restricting layer down below. Maybe if we're in California, it's bedrock. If we're in Houston, it's marine sediments down below. And then we have the overburden stress of the overlying soil column above. We end up with shear failure occurring. And that surface of shear failure is called a slick and side. That surface feature, which often is smooth and it has striations on it, is a slick and side. So we see actually movement, mass movement of parts of the soil relative to another part. In soil morphology, we now recognize the structural units that form as wedge-shaped aggregates. This is a very oversimplified wedge-shaped aggregate right here. In Australia, they would call this wedge-shaped aggregate a lenticular aggregate. Looking at the macro view, these vertisols, subject by shrink swell, high clay content, high activity clay, we see cracks that extend during the dry season at least 50 centimeters in depth and can be quite wide. Those are the cracks. And then below that overburden stress, that overlying soil column, we then see these slickened sides that are close enough that they intersect and form these wedge-shaped aggregates. So in general, subsurface structure, shrink swell is a very important process. It can form angular, blocky, prismatic, and then invertisols in particular, or vertic intergrade soils, this wedge-shaped aggregate. Typically, high clay content soils and that also have high activity clay are the most prone to these high shrink swell dominated processes. And it's very interesting that these soils also have to have wet dry cycles. And the behavior of the soil then in terms of conducting gas, water, and solute movement is going to be very different depending upon when it's wet or when it's dry. Here's an example of the Cache Valley of Utah, where Utah State University is, where we see soils that have a lot of prismatic structure, and here it was during the wet season where we had some high water table actually in the profile facilitating that wet-dry cycle. The challenge, of course, for you soil physicists is in quantifying and modeling the structure as well as the temporal variability in that structure, so the wet-dry season. Also, the spatial variability. We can see a really nice, well, not a really nice, but nice enough alfalfa crop here versus a salt grass surface, knowing that the water table likely comes to different depths from the soil surface, which is then going to influence different hydrologies, different wet-dry cycles, and therefore slightly different structure formation. But then we have some special cases, the cases where, you know, when I'm trying to explain to my students why structure didn't form. One of them is a clast-supported matrix. This would be a common geological term. It's basically where we have particles, sand, gravels, and cobbles that intersect and basically support the structure. These clasts support the structure of the soil. We may wait around 10,000, 100,000 or more years and still not see what we normally think of soil structure because of that clast-supported matrix. We would also have obliteration of structure. We'll see it most commonly where there's carbonate accumulation, and the carbonates plug the pores. This is an example of soils on the Jornada del Muerto in New Mexico. Classic example where we began to see nice subsoil structure, but as we get down farther into the zone of carbonate accumulation, that structure is basically obliterated. We go from subangular or angular blocky structure to something that would be described as massive and structureless. Also, microaggregation in highly weathered soils, such as oxisols. This is in the Canary Islands, La Gomera, the island of La Gomera, covered by the laurel forest that probably persisted since the Tertiary. These beautiful oxisols and high clay content, low activity clay, but because of the high amount of iron oxides forming microaggregates, we have a very good development of microporosity. So the high clay content, we can measure it in the laboratory, but effectively in terms of hydraulic conductivity, we'll measure much more rapid rates. So in conclusion, the origin of structure, we think of biological processes dominating structure formation in the surface horizon, particularly in cases where we have high plant cover and high soil organic matter. Physical processes tend to dominate in the subsurface with low plant cover, low soil organic matter. In the surfaces, physical processes will dominate in surfaces with low plant cover, low soil organic matter. In the subsurface, probably the most common one that we see evidence for is that shrink swell, although others are possible in terms of physical processes. The shrink swell process becomes a challenge for modeling. And then, of course, there's always those special cases like carbonate accumulation, obliteration of structure. Thank you. Yes, and I probably was overwhelmed by the question was, what is the role of fauna and microfauna in soil structure? And I realize now I was thinking dominantly of plant structure. But yes, definitely, fauna play a role. Macrofauna can play a role in terms of mixing and processing materials in terms of processing mineral materials through their guts, adding organic material through the soil, as well as same thing as roots in terms of physical processes, the physical process of animals moving through the soil physically pushes aside soil particles, compacts material to some extent around the outside, and then often those microfaunal and faunal burrows become avenues for air and water movement. For example, I should have mentioned cicada burrows in Utah. We see them all over the place. They are the first parts of the soil to become cemented by silica where we have them because of the avenue of water movement. Thank you for that.